flying backwards over the Earth's surface. Thick silver letters edged with gold rise over the curve of the planet and form the word Universal in front of the lit-up continents. Beneath it, in smaller letters, a Comcast company. White letters over a picture of a deserted island by night. Cameron McIntosh International. A sunset behind a barbed wire fence. Then white letters overlaid that read, "It all began 25 years ago." Stephen Fry.
It couldn't be more relevant, really, because in the 15 years since it's been on the stage, we've been at war more times. A musical may seem like a trite way of dealing with it, but if you see this show, you'll realise it isn't. It's very emotionally complex and very rewarding.
A montage of scenes from Miss Saigon being performed on stage. Cameron McIntosh.
It's a wonderful mix of two of the most powerful human emotions with an amazing score by Boobalin Schoenberg.
The title rendered in white on red, "The Heat is Back On." Cameron McIntosh, producer.
The show opened 25 years ago. It did come off the back of an extraordinary period in the musical theatre where Andrew Lloyd Webber and myself, and with Claude-Michel Schoenberg and Alain Bibille, this is the fourth show I'd done back to back. By the time that Miss Saigon opened in London, there was an unbelievable appetite for big musicals.
Cameron first brought me to London to do Follies in 1987. And before we even started rehearsals, he said, "Oh, Bobby, I've got this show, Miss Saigon, I'd love you to do." And I said, "Shouldn't we maybe get through the first show before you see if I want to do the second show?"
Of them all, it's arguably the most successful in that decade. But equally, it was the biggest risk when we started, because it didn't have an Andrew Lloyd Webber name behind it. Boobalin and Schoenberg had yet to become the huge global stars that they subsequently did. And of course, we had no stars in it. Jonathan Pryce was a wonderfully adept and well-known actor within the theatrical world, but he wasn't necessarily box office. And therefore, what we set out to do was create this fantastically large advance and let drop the idea of a helicopter, big, great big set pieces. So consequently, by the time it came to the opening night, there was this fantastic buzz of expectation.
It's the first time I've not ever watched, and I don't think I'll ever watch a first night again, because I've realised that this is the solution to not getting nervous. If it goes wrong, I won't be there to see it.
Lead actress Lea Salonga takes her final bow. Then the cast celebrates behind the curtain. Yeah! Miss Saigon opens worldwide. A woman being interviewed outside a theatre.
Seen Miss Saigon?
284.
Names of cities rush by in white. A Miss Saigon flag flutters. Then another audience member's interviewed outside a theatre.
"Is there something mysterious about this Saigon thing? I've not seen anything that is close to it."
Bob Avian.
"I was the choreographer in 1989, London, and I'm basically here doing the same job, but with many changes, making it grittier, I would say, darker. Basically, I'm enhancing the work that I did originally with the great help of Jeffrey Garrett, who's been my associate, and together we're remounting the show."
Now, story-wise, I want to go to the end so that we could actually go back to the lyrics of "The American Dream" and then finish the number in the way that it's always been done.
Okay.
Lengthwise.
Okay.
Should you want so another reprise? It's an interjection to the final end bit. Does that make sense to you, Claude-Michel?
I have to think. Look at it and think.
Keep going in there. No, no, do it once. After you keep.
Yeah. And then go into that random.
Yeah.
Claude-Michel starts to play too.
Yes. And then back to a...
There, yeah. You were crying.
Can I go...
Yeah.
the American dream.
For the end?
When they run to him.
Oh, before the cycle.
It's the beginning of the cycle.
Yeah, okay.
The big musical change is an extension to the American dream, showing that the money conjured up by the engineer's greed turns into a destructive tornado.
While the pianist and Claude Michel played the discordant tune, Bob Avian and Jeffrey Garrett circled the mirrored studio, marking out an extension to the dance routine.
We can do more than that, huh?
So you return to the vocal at the end?
Or orchestra. Yes, it can be vocal or orchestra, as you like.
There was something surprising about how it landed, which I really liked about that. Into it. And so quickly.
You want my finger to blend?
No.
Bob.
Yeah. I want the orchestration to get jazz here.
Well,
there.
Let's do that.
When I was given the original script for Miss Saigon, and I saw the challenges that I was faced with as a choreographer, I go, oh my God, one of these production numbers is about imperialism, one of these numbers is about capitalism, and I'm going, oh, and how do I tackle this? I said, these are big ideas, and I have to try and make book points during it. And with the help of the authors and Cameron and everybody involved, eventually you get there. But it's a very difficult challenge. It's not coming out and doing a tap dance. You know, Alfonso, I may want to add some drum riffs and accents to a part of this. We've made some adjustments. It's a little jazz here now. Not to change the orchestration, but to give it some kicks and things like that.
Okay.
When we get to it.
Okay.
Going back to work with Cameron is like going back home. I've done, actually, this is my 7th production with him. And, you know, doing Miss Saigon, we've done many companies all over the world. So I see Claude Michel and Alain a lot. And it's like coming home. It's wonderful.
Miss Saigon is a very successful show. It's our 2nd big success. Because, of course, we have a real story. And because of the title Miss Saigon and the element we put in the show, give to the production a lot of value.
I think it's always for the same two reasons. At the heart of this musical, there is a very strong book on which we have been working for years. In order to make this story so interesting, so true, and so moving that we were the first one 25 years ago. And the second thing, obviously, that makes a musical survive is the music.
Lawrence Connor, director, new production.
It's a show that, for many cultures, I think they can really identify. And I don't think many musicals allow a sort of cultural diversity in the way that Miss Saigon does. And that really brings it to so many different areas of audience.
The popular understanding of this musical goes far deeper than it does with many other shows. With Miss Saigon, I think there's something about the depth of passion and extremity of emotion in that show, which really seems to somehow spill out beyond theatre and even beyond word of mouth and hit something in people's minds. There is something in the air which meant that I think Miss Saigon was not only right that it came back, but it was actually kind of urgent and necessary that it came back.
The first time it was all a reflection of the Vietnam War, and being an American and experiencing that war was heartbreaking for us Americans because it was the first war we lost.
But of course, this kind of situation can happen today in Afghanistan, in Syria, maybe in Ukraine.
All the things that are inside the story of Miss Saigon are contemporary problems.
The lead actress cradling a child, Nicholas Orlott, managing director, Cameron McIntosh Limited.
It's the right year to bring back Miss Saigon for two really big reasons. Firstly, we are under a huge pressure from a theatre-going audience, some of whom remember it, a lot of whom think they remember it, but probably weren't even born when it opened, number one. And number two, and perhaps more importantly, the world is a very different place now to when it was when this show first opened in 1989.
Through the television show, movies and everything, there is an evolution of the audience and their expectations are totally different.
As far as the narrative is concerned, I think also the musical styling and the style of acting is a little bit more film-like. It's very natural and honest.
Nicholas Orlott.
The new production was born out of the need in the early 2000s to create a new touring production. We toured the original wonderful production throughout the UK, but each move took 2 weeks and it cost nearly £750,000 to move it each time. So Cameron decided to create a lighter but just as impactful production, which has subsequently evolved through touring America, through touring the UK, into the great beast that you see on the stage of the Prince Edward now.
Where Lawrence Connor and a new team of people were brought by Cameron into reinventing the show and not just reviving it.
The reason I reimagine these shows is because I love the material. And therefore, I know that if I love it, I am not going to do anything to betray the original production. In fact, part of what I do is not, I don't like changing things just for the sake of it. I always have a benchmark of what we have to achieve.
Auditions, 2013. Auditions on video and in person. Lawrence Connor.
Casting of the show is complex because we started at home, obviously, because we wanted to sort of see exactly who we had around us.
We knew from our first experience back in the late 80s that it was going to be a year, 18 months at least, till we knew that we had a cast.
In fact, the first time I think Cameron was talking about restaging the production, we actually went back to Manila and we did like a big open call. But that was sort of like the first dipping our toe, if you want, into seeing where we could get the Asian community.
Of course, because we've managed to do Miss Saigon around the world in many different productions over the years, we knew there were a lot more places we could look this time than we did in the late 80s. So it was genuinely a worldwide search.
It all kind of really started, I suppose, in America when we were looking for Kim. And Eva jumped out of the box.
It's amazing. We found Lea Salonga at the end of our long quest back in Manila when we were casting the show the first time around. And here, as by miracle, come this young American girl of Asian descent called Eva Nobelzada. And she is as miraculous as when we were listening to Lea Salonga the very first time.
Eva singing. Eva's final audition, Majestic Theatre, New York, 2013. Gods of the sun, bring him to Lawrence Connor.
I think I must have spent 2 hours working with this girl. I think she just can seem to take everything, and the way she applied it was extraordinary.
She had tremendous both simplicity and savoir-faire, and she was a wonderful natural actress.
Cameron actually pulled me aside and he just sat me down and said, how would you feel about moving to London? And I just started crying. It was like I was on cloud nine. Like, I couldn't feel my body. It was like an out-of-body experience.
Lesson, I think she's only 18, and just a sheer delight.
We said there and then, all of us, that the gods of the theatre had been more than kind to us by finding yet another great Kim for us.
A plane landing on tarmac. Eva's arrival to London, Heathrow Airport, 2014.
Arriving in London was, my breath has taken away from me. As the plane was descending, I was looking at my mom and she was crying. But I think she was more emotional than me. But I think for me it was just, oh my God, this is really happening.
Is it the first time that you've ever been here?
Yes, wow. First time I've ever left the States, so.
God, wow.
Yeah.
Eva and her mother get into a chauffeur-driven car in the airport car park.
While we were in the taxi, just seeing London, how beautiful it is, and like, it really did feel like I was in a different country, like a new chapter of my life had begun.
It felt like you were in a different country. That's weird. No, that's just weird.
Anyway,
Eva grins, watching London go by the car window. Day one of rehearsals. Three Mill Studios, East London. In a large rehearsal room, the cast and crew, including Eva and Cameron, mingle, chat, and enjoy a buffet. Lawrence Connor.
Hello, everyone. My name's Lawrence Connor. I'm director of the show, and it's a pleasure to meet you all.
I'm Cameron, and I'm the other engineer of Miss Saigon.
15 months ago, we started this journey of sort of putting together a cast for this show, and all of a sudden, we have a ton of people in this room.
I was told today that there are 18 different countries represented here. I don't think that's ever happened with any show.
It's going to be a really, really tough rehearsal process. It's an incredible piece. And I know that over the next few days that you'll really start to understand things that perhaps you haven't considered before.
So it's a marvellous thing that this show has gone round the world and brought whole new generations of performers through. I think this is absolutely the right moment in our 25th year to reignite the passion for Miss Saigon, and we couldn't have a better cast to do it with. So bon voyage.
The cast applauds. Then the composers and producers shake their hands. A dance rehearsal.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 1.
Bob Avian.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
There's a sequence early in the show called The Heat Is On, and it's in a very bawdy nightclub in Saigon. And it's a very sexual, druggy, alcoholic kind of ambiance.
Welcome to Dreamland.
In week one, the way the rehearsals are structured, there's a lot of pre-work where the girls are integrated to the boys, particularly in that scene. So it's never something they learn on their own and then thrown into the scene. So again, it's a real process they go through.
Actresses flipping their long hair as they pin actors to tables and sit on their laps. And Dream Near Fitu, original and new costume design.
As a woman, I'm very much aware of the vulnerability of the girls and what we're asking them to do.
There is a little bit of sexual energy that happens on the stage, especially in scenes like Dreamland and in Bangkok.
And getting the performers to get to the right level is very difficult. In many cases, it's embarrassing for them.
Rachel Ango, Gigi.
At first, I'm kind of, I don't know how to do this, but, you know, as the day goes by, you kind of bonded already, and it's so easy for me to do it now without any qualms and, you know, whatsoever.
In the beginning, it's very giggly for them, especially the more innocent actors and actresses. And we have to break down those walls. It's a very difficult thing to do, but we're trying to get to the reality of how horrifying and how terrible things were, that all manners of etiquette and morality were let down. And for the cast, it's a challenge.
The actors on stage in full costume. And since we're stuck here in hell, the rehearsal room. The cast rehearsing a bar brawl scene with a specialist fight choreographer.
I'm Kevin McCurdy, I'm the fight choreographer for Miss Saigon. When I come into an environment such as this, and I'm making sure that I learn the scene very, very quickly, I have to have a photographic memory to be able to go right. That's happening here, this is happening there. I know the scene has already been set, and I'm looking to fine-tune what can happen, capping the realism, making sure that if any violence happens, then it looks real. It's not looking staged. So then I chat with the director. The director tells me what he wants or what she wants, and then I get to work. Then you're in there, yeah? Now this becomes safe.
Yeah. Kevin demonstrates a shaft.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Then we're in. You're not putting any pressure on, yeah?
Yeah.
Got a wonderful thing here.
Yep.
You know, make it alive. Make it alive, you know what I mean? So we've got all that, which is then gonna give you straight away, then you're like, yeah, okay. In Dreamland, we've got one of the guys being thrown against a table. It's a lovely metal table, and so we can use the sound on that. Yeah, look at that. So you're gonna come into the table, hands do the noise. I'm in total control here. Yeah? I'm getting them to slap the surface, so therefore we get a nice resonating sound. The sound is dissipated, so it's not going in. If it goes in, then it causes pain. We don't want to cause pain. They're going to be doing this show God knows how many times, so we just used to dissipate using reverse energy.
The actors do the table shove scene. Rachel Ango.
Kevin is really amazing because he made it look so real.
Looking more rougher, looking more physically ugly will help. Boom, coming through. Yeah, okay, so we got eye contact and we're there.
Rachel looks stunned as Kevin delivers a realistic slap.
So that's happening.
Yeah. Can you video in? I loved it. You know, it adds up to the character too. And I feel like an action star, actually.
You think you know a lot of things? No, you don't. As soon as you talk to him, you go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. He's great.
On stage, North Vietnamese soldiers blindfold Kim and hold her at gunpoint. Later, Kim's cousin Tui holds her face and stares urgently into her eyes as he sings. In the same scene, Kim's sweetheart Chris aims his gun at Tui. Surrounded by gunmen, Chris aims his weapon at Tui. Looking defiant, Tui steps forward and presses his forehead to the barrel. Lawrence Connor.
Kim is an extraordinary character as far as she has to have such an incredible heart. And we're introduced to a young peasant girl from the country who has no real understanding of life experience. She's been forced into the most extreme life experience at such a young age by losing her parents in a tragic way. And she meets the engineer who brings her into the world of prostitution because she has to survive. When she meets Chris, who again is another complicated character, he gives her something that perhaps she'd already been missing, which is hope and love. And there's a sense of need that is developed in one night because of everything that they share together.
So stay with me and hold me tight and dance like it's the last night of the world.
Cameron McIntosh.
Well, I've known Alistair Brammer for a number of years because he, in fact, came as a school kid to be in a gala night at the Queen's Theatre for Les Miserables. At the end of the show, to show that a whole new generation of kids had taken Les Miserables to their hearts, we brought on some really great student performances of it, and he was one of them playing Marius. I was so struck with his Marius, I asked him if he would come back in a few years' time when he'd left school to audition for the part again. Which he did, and he got, and so he got into the show at the Queen's and was a marvellous Marius there. And out of that, he got into the student gang when we filmed the show about two or three years ago with Hugh Jackman and Anne Hathaway. He was growing as a performer all the time, and he came and auditioned for Chris. And the music so sat in his voice, he physically and indeed temperamentally was Chris.
Alistair's Miss Saigon audition, London 2014.
Yeah, I had four or five auditions. I was in Warhorse at the time, and it was during the matinee I got a call in the interval to say, you've got the role of Chris. And I was chuffed. It's one of my parts I really wanted to do. I was really, really chuffed. He said, but you have to keep it absolutely quiet. So I was in my dressing room with like 10 other guys because we all shared a dressing room. And I just got this good news and went, okay, bye. And just had to carry on as if nothing had happened.
He understood what he was trying to say, and his portrayal of the breakdown, which we had to work on together, was excellent.
And all
I made was a mess, just like everyone else, in a place full of mystery that I never once
Lawrence Connor.
Stood.
There's a sort of beauty to Chris in the sense that he probably went into the war with a heart believing that he was doing good. And of course, because it was the first televised war, the feeling in America regarding the war was completely divided. And so there's a part of him that just doesn't really understand it anymore and doesn't really want to be part of it anymore at the time. And he feels lost. And so at the moment he meets Kim, he's at a low point in his life until he meets her.
Screw the engineer! You're the one good thing that I found out here.
And then he realizes that in a world where he doesn't feel he has anything to contribute, there is actually something he can give and something he can do, and completely dedicates himself to that girl.
A world that's so different from all that you are.
Until the war comes to an end and America steps in and pulls him apart from that.
Alain Boubile.
Among all these young people, there was one veteran, and this is John Briones, our engineer. He has played the show at the creation.
He was first involved with the production, was organising the original auditions in Manila back in 1988. And one day he said, look, could he come be seen for the role as well? And he got into the shortlist, in fact. Somebody I think else might have come instead, and then they fell out, and so we were delighted that we had space to take John to London. And of course he went through the whole creative process of putting the show together, and with Jonathan Pryce and Leia Salonga, even though he was very young at the time, he ended up over the years understudying and indeed playing the engineer.
There! I will crown
John Briones.
This is where I grew up. Of course, I had life in the Philippines, and I was 22 when I first left the Philippines, my first time to leave the country, and it was London. So I didn't speak any English. You know, for a 22-year-old earning money, living on your own, I was, you know, on top of the world, and so many great memories.
He's been doing a lot of other things other than Miss Saigon for the last several years. But of course, when we were starting to audition for the new company, he, among several other alumni who played the engineers, came up for us. And what was interesting is that at first seeing him, he was still doing the old show. And then we had to say, look, John, you're a different man now. You're 20 years older. Throw it away, come and do something else. And he started to play around with it. And suddenly we saw that there was a completely new way of approaching to make a very, very different engineer.
Just from his sheer personality, the force of personality, you have, you know, a feeling of affection and repulsion at the same time. You know, very few actors, I think, have that ability.
All right!
John Briones.
Tell me how and why you're at it. Tell me why!
Never dreamt to be back here, to be asked back. I'm so grateful, very blessed, and lucky.
I mean, he's called the engineer because he sort of mechanically works his way through everybody and gives them what they need, fixes situations. So he's able to bring a light relief to the show, which is much needed in an otherwise very dark and emotional piece.
Oh, fresh air.
What you get so much more from the engineer is the sense of desperation and the need of everybody else. He really gives voice to their idea of what freedom and capitalism means to these people, and how he has embraced the whole idea of what the Americans stand for.
Michael Mahler.
Yesterday we got to hear a sing-through where the entire cast sang the entire score from beginning to end for us, and it was really revealing.
I can say that we have been revising more or less 10% of the vocabulary of the show, where all of us thought it needed some new thoughts 15 years or 10, 20 years later, which maybe you couldn't say properly in 1989 when we opened the show.
John Briones in rehearsals.
I'll sell blondes there. And then I'll own your sweet ass.
Yes.
What's that I smell in?
Lawrence Connor.
It's weird as a director, you know, when you direct actors, you almost don't want the world to see it. You sort of want it to stay in that little bubble forever because it's such a special process and there's an intimacy to the whole thing that once you leave that room, it becomes something completely different. You'll never see the story told in that way again.
Hugh Maynard, John, right. Miss Saigon, right. 2014.
That's all.
You're working with a truly international cast. For example, Kwang Ho, he doesn't speak much English, but boy, can he sing in English.
Sometimes the diction is kind of hard when it's not their first language. There are certain vowel sounds and syllables that they don't use.
When he sings, you can understand every word, every consonant. He's literally learnt his role by ear.
The strides and the work that he has put into it, I sort of defy anyone to sort of not know that his English isn't as good as his diction, ironically. He's an incredible performer.
Eva Noble-Zarda.
Vocally, I think my hardest scene is the hotel scene, finding out that my husband has another wife, and it's such an awkward, intense, electrifying moment that I get to share with Tamsin on stage. So those are one of the scenes that I look forward to, but I kind of get really nervous before I go on.
Alistair Brammer.
If you're saying that because you made him change his mind!
I thought the sing through went really well. It's because we've each rehearsed our separate bits, but it's good to hear it in a sort of linear formation and hear how it all sews together. It was the first time I've ever heard it sung all the way through, and it was really, really nice to hear it.
Alan Bubiel.
Oh, Alan.
Talking only of music and lyrics, there is a complete new song called Maybe, which is the new song for Ellen in Act Two now, which makes her, I hope, less of a just one-sided character and a much more sympathetic character.
It's been an ongoing process. There's been many different incarnations of this song. There's been many different incarnations of this song for over 25 years.
Claire Moore's Ellen, It's Her or Me. Original production, 1989. Kerry Ellis is Ellen, Now That I've Seen Her. Miss Saigon UK Tour 2004.
Ellen in the show has always been a problem because she's a troublemaker. Without her, we will have a wonderful love story with no impossibilities.
And no show, maybe.
So a lot of people, and no show, a lot of people, they hate her.
There's so much going on in that girl that the danger of her becoming this sort of neurotic American is really terrible.
I've always felt from the original production that it was a little one note, the original song, that it worked well and didn't actually take the audience through on the journey of, you know, the awful situation that Ellen discovers.
The new cast.
Is it her now?
We thought, okay, maybe we need to make her a different girl, a girl with more feelings, more thoughts, you know, more sensitivity.
Claude Michel's melody, this new one, is very typically him. What I love about it is its fragility. And we've got, you know, fantastic Tamsin Carroll mm-hmm. to do it. And you think about Claude Michel's development post the original production of Miss Saigon. It still sounds as though it comes from the show.
Claude Michel Schoenberg playing Maybe.
Tamsin, the poor girl, she had at least 17 different versions of the song, and she was working hard to revise the song, but she managed to... And she's a brilliant actress.
Tamsin, she really took the material and gave it a whole new life, and she's so gritty and so raw and real.
This whole song, Maybe, it does explain all the different thoughts that are going in the protagonist's head.
Tamsin singing on stage, then in rehearsals.
That was a large part of the work, but the task has always been for us to sort of look at the entire piece, and it was really informative for us, you know, to sort of hear where it's really working now and what we still have to do to sort of improve it and make sure it's all
you know, firing on all cylinders, but it was spectacular.
The production staff give the actors a standing ovation. Children arriving at Three Mills Studios, East London, for day one of rehearsals for Tam. Joe Hawes, children's casting and administration.
We're at Three Mills Studios today because it's the first day of rehearsal for the Tams. This show is quite difficult to cast in that the children are around 4 years old, and we have six children playing the part because of licensing regulations.
Lawrence Connor.
It's very difficult when you're working with children as young as five because it's not an environment that they're necessarily used to. I mean, it's so big and there's so many people and so much attention.
The rehearsal room.
Hello, how are you? Nice to see you, nice to see you. Hello, Connor, Maria, Monk, how are you? Zen, you good?
Yeah.
Do you know what you're doing today?
No.
We're just going to meet all the actors that you're going to be working with. Does that sound good?
Yeah.
Cool, come on, come with me.
Today we introduced the Tams to the principal company of Miss Saigon. It's really important to break the ice and to allow the kids and the grown-ups to play and to form a bond.
Eva chases one of the Tams in a game of duck, duck, goose. Lawrence Connor.
The way you rehearse the scene is very gently, and we sort of play with the children for some time, and so that they get used to the actors in a way that they know that they're just playing. So even when they see them at their most angry or they see them in their most fierce, they know that it's not them, they know it's not a real moment.
And who is this again?
Raphael.
Does he have like a letter here that says that he's Raphael, like an R? Like Superman. You know when Superman, in his costume, he has an S in the front, no?
John giggles. Jean-Pierre Van Der Spey.
Today we played games, drew pictures, danced, and then we also did a few little elements that they'll have to do within the show. You know, the way that Kim carries them, which we call a monkey. It allows the Kims to be able to interact with the person they're playing opposite, but at the same time have the child with them and feel that they can do anything with their hands. So we did a few things like that today, just to start the ball rolling.
Lawrence Connor.
The scenes that they're part of are tricky because they're high-octane, very dangerous scenes where guns are pulled out and knives are pulled out and, you know, someone threatens to kill the child with a knife, and it appears to be incredibly brutal. So the way you choreograph it is that the child never actually sees the knife or the gun produced, that he's always somehow, his head is always turned away from it, that he's carefully guarded from all of those things. It's difficult and complex, and you can't just throw children into that scenario. It has to be a spoon-fed process, but it's really down to the sense of the nurturing element of the rehearsal process and how the cast sort of embrace them as part of the company. That sort of helps them to develop their characters and become Tam.
The new set taking shape inside the Prince Edward Theatre, London 2014. Toti Driver and Matt Kinley, set design, new production.
Coming to the Prince Edward Theatre after Drury Lane, we were faced with some challenges how to make that space feel as epic as the original production at Drury Lane, which was, you know, wonderfully operatic with John Napier's original design using all those blinds and colour. And we don't have that amount of real estate here at the Prince Edward Theatre, but we've been using technology to help us bring some of that world to life. And I think when you think about those parts of the world, you think about those big, amazing skies and colours. And that's something we wanted to expand upon from Adrian's original concept of the show.
Also, let's face it, we knew we had to deliver a helicopter.
So where the original tour had a projected helicopter, we do...
Which had been very successful.
Yeah.
That delivered on one level in a touring production what we needed to say in the story. However, I think people are expecting to see a 3D helicopter.
Yeah.
So Very early on, we knew that that was something that we had to figure out.
Yeah, much like the barricade in Les Mis or the chandelier in Phantom, it becomes its own character in the show. And delivering that in a smaller space is a challenge, but an enjoyable one.
Carpenters and painters working on the set.
So the helicopter was made by a brilliant man called Simon Kenny, who has workshops in South London, and we knew it had to be made as a scenic build rather than just getting an old helicopter and cutting it up, even though it would have been nice and light being aluminium, but it wouldn't have had the structure that we wanted it to, and we needed it to do a very specific thing.
We knew we wanted Chris to travel in the helicopter as it exited, so we knew that Simon at Souvenir would easily create a fantastic shape that would replicate that.
We worked very close with Matt, taking his design and fitting it to the actual practicality of what's needed to achieve the piece safely for the actors to use and for the whole thing to actually stay together.
We really tried to play up the notion that the whole sequence is very much Kim's nightmare. So we tried to be less literal with the structure of the helicopter and make it a bit more strange and skeletal in itself. So that it seems real, but it's not real. And I think that helps the storytelling by pushing all of that. We had to develop a new look for the helicopter, which is something we wanted to do.
The new helicopter is put into a container lorry. 16th of April, 2014. Actors arriving for day one at the Prince Edward Theatre, London.
Good morning.
Welcome to the Prince Edward Theatre.
Hi, Mark. Hi.
Are you excited?
Yes.
Like, really excited?
Yes. Yeah. Day one, our new home. It'll be nice, it's the whole palette.
Oh, my God, I'm moving in. This is my home now.
Two actors do an elaborate handshake.
That just happened. That's live.
Alistair Brammer walks into his dressing room.
Hello.
Alistair.
I'm pretty happy with this little setup.
This is very exciting. I've never had a dressing room this big before.
The actors look amazed as they walk into the auditorium and see the set on stage.
Welcome, everybody, to the Prince Edward Theatre. Yeah! Welcome to what is a work in progress, of course. When you start walking around to get back to stage afterwards, you'll see it is still a building site. Please be really careful, no joke. There is all sorts everywhere, plastic on the floors, and you might walk around the corner and find a builder coming towards you with a 12-foot plank of wood. Be prepared for anything.
The cast assembles on the balcony of the Prince Edward Theatre and poses for a group photograph. Alistair Brammer.
It's always an exciting time because you've been rehearsing with these pieces of tape on the floor where your set will be. And so this is where you go up some steps, this is where you jump onto a thing and you go, okay. And then when you get in there and there's actual steps there and it changes everything.
It's a huge challenge because the physical environment is so immense around the actors and the actors have to learn the technical aspects of the scenery around them so that they stay safe.
You just got to basically start rehearsals all over again with a basic idea in your head of what the pattern is, but you've got to start all over again.
Here's the tech, commence tech. Yeah.
17 days until the first preview. Eva having a dress fitted, then one of the Tams emerging from a room in costume.
Yeah.
I got my costume on.
The hat's quite squashed though.
I got my suit.
John John on stage in costume.
Oh my God!
Yo, look at the door.
John, you sexy animal.
An actor in flares. Bruno Poet, lighting design, new production.
Tech for me is the most exciting part of the show. It's when we put everything together, and it's a lot of it centered around the lighting. And you've got to make decisions quickly and adapt to changes. Something that may happen in the rehearsal room, you've got to plan for, but then on stage, Lawrence decides to restage it or move the scenery, so you've got to be able to react to that fast. And there's a sort of exhilaration to that.
Once you get all of the key people into a room,
there are ideas being thrown around all the time and things change.
The main challenges are just trying to stay on top of everything.
There's always a huge time pressure. There's a lot of people, there's a cast of 40 or so who are hanging around. And a lot of people have opinions about what things should look like. And you have to find a way of sort of cutting through that and getting a picture of what each moment is going to look like, making it quickly, and then trying to move on.
Ready, steady, go.
The actors rehearse moving the barbed wire fence on stage.
Go. That's pretty good.
Technology has evolved hugely in the last 10 years, and certainly since this was originally staged at Drury Lane.
From sound to electrics to set moves, the world of computers now in musical theatre or any theatre is staggering.
We have over 50 radio mics on the cast, whereas the original production probably maybe had 16.
Entering Neofiti, costume design.
One of our difficulties on a show like this is hiding the mic pack. Because, of course, when they're wearing a bikini, there's very little space to put a pack. So one of the solutions is we've made little pouches, and then on the pouches wove hair to match the girls' own hair.
The technology is so small now with the radio mic transmitters that we can put two in girls' wigs and mainly in the back up, hidden in their hair, so they're in bikinis, etc. You don't see anything.
A mic being fitted. Mick Potter, sound design.
Working with this Saigon company is fantastic. I mean, they're all the creme de la creme, so you're working with the best in every field, on stage, in the orchestra pit, front of house, so you just got to keep up.
Thank you very much for a very, very hard day. So, obviously, tomorrow, fortunately, you get a bit of a break, so we have a very exciting day with the SITS probe, obviously. So get some rest, because it's going to be a long day on Friday. But thank you for a great day. Welcome.
24th of April 2014. The SITS Probe, London.
Ladies and gentlemen of Miss Saigon Company, meet this wonderful orchestra.
Claude Michel Schoenberg.
The SITS Probe, it's a very special moment for a show because it's the first time that the company is listening to the orchestra. The singers are discovering the sound of the show.
And it's nice that they seriously listen to orchestration, they listen to instruments that give them their oral palette.
The actors look excited watching the orchestra play. David Brown, original and new orchestrations.
The SITS Probe is very important because it's a chance to concentrate on how the orchestral writing mixes with the vocal writing.
Welcome to Dreamland!
John Briones is joined by the chorus.
It's always necessary to look at orchestrations when that amount of time particularly has elapsed between the original and the present production. Musical styles change and the way of playing changes. So there is a great deal of attention made as to how that original score can be adapted to 2014.
It's terribly exciting because we haven't got to prove anything. All we've got to do is play some great music and sing some great songs.
Eva singing.
The dream I love to fight, the movie in my mind.
This current production raised the stakes, raised the temperature of Miss Saigon. There was something so fresh, so new about it that I, for a moment, felt I was living again that first SITS Probe that we had 25 years ago. It was a stunning thing for me. It brought me to tears.
The production team celebrates. 11th of April 2014, 4:04 a.m. Prince Edward Theatre. Bruno Poet, lighting design.
Was going to be one of the biggest problems to solve in the show.
Part of us kind of wanted to do a bit of a trick of the eye as well, where the audience think it's projection, seeing it through things, is it or isn't it?
You start to see the motion of a projected helicopter coming towards you, and then from behind this gauze wall, you see the headlights of our real helicopter come through and burst through.
We had hoped and planned that it might work out this way, but we never really know until we get the projectors and the physical helicopter in the same place.
Matt Kinley.
It's always one of those things when you're dealing with the safety of people and engineering, it's of paramount importance that everyone feels and is safe. Because we desperately wanted the helicopter to take Chris away whilst you saw him leaving Kim behind. So we thought that'd be incredibly powerful.
So, Lawrence, what position do you want him in as it flies off?
What you just did there was kind of nice. I mean, you were sort of like that, yeah. Do you feel safe?
Yeah.
Should we have a little ride with you like that?
Yeah.
Now, just imagine the downdraft of that thing, so you've got to play the energy...
Alistair's dangling from the helicopter. Alistair holds on to his military helmet as the helicopter rises. Toti Driver.
Working with Luke has been great because he's really kind of done this fantastic start journey of the chopper arriving, and also with mixed sound of this incredibly powerful noise racketing through the whole auditorium that really gets you in your bones. You know, you're really being delivered this incredible beast.
The cast applauds after the helicopter test.
Okay, good. So we're going to reset.
Air Saigon has just had its first flight and it's incredibly impressive. I can't wait to see it finish.
Lawrence Connor.
3 days left to go, and the heat really is on.
Hey, you're back! I told you that girl was clean!
At the moment, we've just gone through teching it, putting it all together, and now we are putting the orchestra into that mix now. So we're doing chunks of it and sort of seeing how the transitions sort of line up. And we've sort of hit a few markers that have been problematic.
It's all coming together. It's very exciting.
It's all chaos.
I just see clutter and debris everywhere.
Working through the show very slowly from beginning to end. By the time you get to the end of the show, you can hardly remember how you started at the beginning.
That's the challenge we've got to do now, is like take all those elements and seamlessly join them together and to make a whole show. Toti will do it.
Bruno Poet.
And what's great about getting to the dress rehearsals now is that we can see the whole show run and get a sense of how the show flows. It's a great opportunity to tie the whole thing together. And then we watch it again, take some more notes and continue the next day.
If everything lines up in the way that I hope it will, then I think they'll be blown away by it. It's just, let's hope it all lines up and happens.
See you on the flip side.
3rd of May 2014, the first preview. The actors are limbering up on stage.
The night of the first preview was... there was such an electric feeling that was buzzing throughout the cast and even throughout the audience, and we could actually hear it in our dressing rooms.
I'm feeling really good. I'm feeling really nervous, but it's a good nervous, so the show's gonna be amazing, so I'm really excited.
Personally, 50% of me felt sick to my stomach, and the other 50% was just like, bring it.
The cast taking their final bow. Cameron McIntosh.
I knew from the very first preview the audience liked what we had done with this new production. It wasn't like we were doing the new production for the first time. We've done it 8 times before, though we had made a quantum leap, both in ambition and execution.
The cast celebrates. Eva.
We've been working so hard for the past how many months and putting all this emotion, all this physical labor and all of these people, like Alistair said, there's so many people that play a vital role in this production. And now is our chance to show everybody and even the people who aren't on stage, like the lights and the sound, like everyone shined that night.
Aoife's castmates congratulating her.
I'm about to go cry in my dressing room.
Yeah. The first preview was probably the most exciting first preview I've ever experienced in theatre.
I was sitting next to the lighting designer, who hadn't done a huge commercial musical like this before, and he turned to me at the end, and he looked at me and said, I think this is one of the greatest nights of my life.
The atmosphere of the audience coming into the auditorium, they were all clearly up for a very exciting night in the theatre. And it felt by the end of it that the show hadn't disappointed them, which is a huge thrill to be, to witness that and to experience that. It's like nothing I've felt before in a, you know, in a theatre.
The biggest surprise and the biggest joy is to see people who are between 15 and 30 coming to this show for the first time.
It's a very, very young and very mixed race audience, as well as traditional theatre girls who are coming back to see one of their favourite shows. And that has given an energy to it. I think the reaction of the audience is even rawer, more passionate than it was the first time.
I think it's fair to say it was the smoothest, easiest and most satisfying first preview of any show I've done since I worked for Cameron. When I think of the nightmare of the original, which got through by the skin of its teeth, where you not only had a hugely ambitious piece of technology that we were engaging for the first time, but a brand new show. It was a nightmare.
The original company.
It's still moving. Well, we're moving towards it.
The director, as you know, was the wonderfully famous and generally accommodating Nick Heitner, but his patience was pushed to the very limit. I mean, for Nick, this was the first big musical he'd done. He'd done opera before, but he'd never engaged in technology in the way that we had. And I think when it came to the second or third actor almost being run over by a piece of scenery, he stopped. That was it. He didn't trust technology, he didn't trust the set, he didn't trust any of us. The only thing he trusted was the actors, and he was going to take the actors out of the theatre, and he wasn't going to bring them back into the theatre until we got it sorted.
21st of May 2014, opening night. Actors backstage at the theatre.
Happy opening night!
I'm so excited!
Hello, everyone. Yes, I'm getting ready for our opening night and for the after party.
Come on in, so this is where all the magic happens.
This is like the most exciting room in the building.
It's a half hour call and press night. Yeah.
So many butterflies in my stomach.
One of my outfits.
This is it.
Well, let's all go. See you in a bit.
The actors posing on stage for a cast photo. Then Lawrence Connor giving them a pre-show pep talk.
Every single part of this production is testament to absolutely every person standing on the stage. And you should be immensely proud.
Have the best show, and thank you so much. Miss Saigon.
This is awesome.
Lawrence Connor.
I'm actually a bit nervous. I wasn't expecting to be nervous. And I think it's just all of a sudden hit me that this is it. This is the big night. So, yeah, I feel a little bit anxious, but, yeah, let's see what happens.
Celebrities on the red carpet.
Like, I can't control my excitement. You guys, so the perfect time to bring it back.
It's terrific to have Miss Saigon back. It's one of the great musicals, brilliant production.
To see it for a whole new audience who've never had a chance to see it is really exciting.
Oh, it's just great songs, brilliant music. You know, Bublé and Schomburg. I think they're absolute best, and I'm saying this as someone who loves Les Miserables. And since we're stuck
here in hell, I was at the show 14 years ago, nearly 15 years ago.
I saw it about two or three times.
Did you?
Yeah, I did. Aww.
I was lucky enough to see what's called the Zitz Probe, which is when they first sing and play with the orchestra for the first time, and it was incredibly moving. So if it's a patch on that, then or if it's anything like that, I think it will be especially.
I should be playing all the female parts. Don't you think?
Well, you can't play all
quick
of them.
Changes.
I could see you, yeah, I could see you in a slip, maybe doing a little sort of sad face at the front.
I should be doing that.
Sitting on your knees.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is your 5-minute call. You have 5 minutes.
Nervous. Nervous. Nervous.
We're so excited.
So excited.
So excited.
I feel 25 years younger with all of you tonight, and so will the audience. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Beauty behind me.
Beauty behind me.
Beauty beside me.
Beauty beside me.
Beauty above me.
Beauty above me.
Beauty all around me.
Beauty all around me.
Let's do it.
A montage of footage from the 2014 production.
Welcome to Dreamland.
Actors marching with rifles and twirling red ribbons.
You will not touch him. Don't touch my boy.
The helicopter rises over the barbed wire fence, with Alistair as Chris hanging out of it. The chorus clings to the fence. Then another soldier pulls Chris back into the helicopter. Running between scenes.
The American
yes.
The audience gives a standing ovation, and the cast runs to the edge of the stage to take a bow. Behind the curtain, Cameron McIntosh talks to the actors.
Remember this forever, because that is why we...
They lift Cameron off his feet. More actors share hugs and congratulations, while outside fans pose for photos. The cast signs autographs and audience members holding programmes chat by the theatre.
Most amazing show ever.
It was phenomenal.
I really cry tonight!
It made Daddy cry.
The after party, Somerset House, London. A sign reads, "Welcome to Dreamland." And Miss Saigon lanterns dangle in a tent outside the building. Cameron McIntosh greets guests. Then the cast assembles outside to watch a huge fireworks display. Alistair Brammer, Eva Noble-Zada and John Briones give television interviews and pose for photographs in front of a red Miss Saigon backdrop. John Briones.
It can't get any better than this for an Asian actor, for any actor. A new generation should see the show because it's timeless and it's a great story.
John grins as he poses for photos with Alistair and Eva. Cameron McIntosh.
There are very few contemporary musicals about contemporary subjects.
You can see Miss Saigon is probably not only one of the most innovative shows the last quarter century, but in a way probably one of the most profound and lasting great musicals of the 20th century.
This is a genuinely dramatic, powerful story, one of the most powerful stories ever written. It has incredible muscle, and the audience are reacting to that. I mean, I think even Les Miserables, which still has an extraordinary power with an audience, it reflects many modern themes, but it's not about an actual piece of history in the way that Saigon is about a real piece of history. And that's why very few other musicals come anywhere near it.
So stay with me and hold me tight and dance like it's the last night of the world.
Footage from the rehearsal rooms, featuring John Briones with one of the Tams on his lap, a dancer backflipping, and the production team giggling. The full cast waves from the balcony of the Prince Edward Theatre. Then Claude-Michel Schoenberg laughs and puts his arm around Cameron McIntosh. On stage, Chris and Kim run off, hand in hand. Audio description created by SDI Media. Written by Lindsay West. Narrated by Catherine Whale. Credits appear in white. The heat is back on. Produced by Cameron McIntosh. Directed and edited by Dougie Mackey, David Dolman. 2014 performance footage directed by Brett Sullivan. Head of production, Naomi Stevens. Esteem Motion and Sound UK production. More credits appear in lists. Rachel Ango closes her dressing room door.